Welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Niebergall, and today my guest is Robert Linkle from Training the Older Adult. Robert is a wealth of knowledge for training as we get older, and we talk about it all in this episode. We're going to specifically talk about movement patterns that we all need to be doing as we get older. We're going to be talking about how to train balance, because as we know, our balance starts to decrease a bit as we get older. We're going to talk about how to build strong hips and a ton more. I know you're going to enjoy this episode. All of his information is in the show notes, so let's get to it. So welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I have with me, and I'm so excited for this conversation, Robert Linkle from Training the Older Adult. And in transparency here, Robert and I were just chatting before we went on, and my mind was blown by what you were telling me. Oh my gosh. So we have a lot to chat about, you and I.
We do have a lot to talk about.
But thank you so much for being here, Robert.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm very happy to be here. And I've been cyber stalking you on Instagram forever and admiring all the work that you do. And really glad that we get the chance to do this. So thank you. Thank you,
you
for having
me. Both.
Me.
We have so much in common. Just training this age group. And let's start with that. Tell me just, I guess the best way to start, tell me a little bit about you and what you do.
Sure. So I run trainingtheolderadult.com, and we're kind of a half and half business. So we started off, my wife Keegan and I run our business here. And I started in the industry when I was 19, but started to specialize at 24 and working with older populations. And as the years have kind of gone by, I've had a lot of other trainers come in and go, I don't know what to do with older adults, and I don't know how to do it and not hurt them. And so we kind of continued to answer like the same questions over and over again. And eventually I'm like, why don't we do a conference? And so I did a conference, and then why don't we do some webinars? So we did a webinar, and then why don't we build a certification? And so we built that. And so kind of turned it into TOA, trainingtheolderadult.com, is like a resource tool. It's a certificate program. And then just tons, I put up videos every single week. There's templates, there's libraries, there's mini courses, just anything and everything you can think of that you would need is in a giant search engine for training older populations. And we build that, and we just continue to add to it. And so it's been a great resource for people. And so that's half our business. And the other half is getting to practice all that. And so I get to work with clients in-house here in our little bunker. It's a 500 square foot converted gym. We did a $20,000 remodel and insulated and cut out windows and got all of our equipment and air conditioning and all this and did the whole thing up. Pretty much kind of like the first half of COVID right there. We closed our 3,000 square foot gym down in Sacramento and kind of had to reinvent here with our online and in-house clients. So we had a dream of wanting to do education at some point that got shoved to the front, and our training with our clients kind of gives us the opportunity to practice all that on a regular basis and fine tune that skill, try new things. And then I'm obsessive about research. I'm a board member with the NSCA, and I just go over that content and that information constantly and just keep kind of refining the tools to do this as efficiently and as safely as possible.
Man, I love it. And I'm looking at your space right now, and man, that this is incredible. Is this at your house or no?
Yeah. So this is, there's the door goes into the kitchen.
Oh my goodness. Oh, right, wow.
There, yep. And then our washer and dryers are hidden in there. And then, on this side, we have the tank and our Air-X bike. I do table work. And then these two doors open up and go out into our yard.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's all converted right here just into a full training space. And then it's also a full recording studio. So we have soundproof ceilings and lighting and cameras and mics and all that good stuff for all the virtual training we do and education stuff. So,
wow.
Yeah, so, it's our little safe haven.
Tell me, when we're saying training the older adult, what is this age bracket that you are talking, that you specifically work with?
So if I had to put a number on it, it would be 50 and over, I guess I would say. But again, that's chronological ordering. Like biologically speaking, I'm looking at people that are probably over their middle-aged curve and have probably a couple physical limitations and or a disease that they're battling. And our number one disease is sarcopenia, which a lot of people don't know that. They know the word atrophy and they know the word osteopenia or osteoporosis, but not a lot of people know sarcopenia. And basically your muscle mass starts to deteriorate right around the age 30 to 35, you hit your max, and then you start going downhill. And it's either gonna go down real quick if you don't train, or it's gonna just kind of slowly if you do train. And then your bones do the same. That's almost the exact same graph and same research. So if you can keep strong muscles, you can keep strong bones, stay away from sarcopenia, which is the loss of muscle mass to a point where you're physically weaker, you're physically, your body is less statured. Your dad that was 5'11 is now like 5'7, 5'4, 5'1, because you're losing the gravity, right? So it's like, we want to keep people strong. So sarcopenia was officially declared a disease in 2016. And so people can be diagnosed with it and they can be treated through their healthcare with it. It's a major problem. You pair that right up with osteoporosis and obesity, that's about 90% of our older population has at least one of those, if not all three.
I think I'll lump us in the kind of the same group, even though we've got a good bit of distance in between us age-wise. But when we look at our parents, because we were just talking about your dad, and I want to get to that here in a second. Yes. But my both of my parents are deceased now, but watching my mom in particular, who lived to be 90, I think she died at 90. Yeah. Watching those last several years of her not being able to stand up from a chair, of her having fallen because she wasn't steady enough to get up out of that chair, not being able to turn a doorknob because she didn't have the grip strength, not being able to push a button on a microwave hard enough for it to engage. You know, watching all of that and living through all of that, it has become my personal mission to help people with this along just like you. But for me personally, as a human being, I don't want to be that person, right? I told my son, there's one thing I can guarantee you about me getting older, and that is I will do everything in my control to have as much strength as I can for as long as I can, you know? And our group, our generation, we're armed with so much more accurate and better information than our parents were back when they were like our age, right?
Then
the generation after us is going to be even better. I mean, you know, everyone's going to be armed with this information. And I think it's what we do with it, you know? And we were talking about right before we went on about your dad. Tell me his story, because I think everyone needs to hear this and hear what's possible.
Absolutely. I was like frantically, as soon as you mentioned it, I was like, I got to find some of these videos of him. And I've got some great ones. If you go on my Instagram, you'll be able to see some of these videos of him. So basically about 4 or 5 years ago, he fell getting off of a boat. They lived in Florida. He fell getting off of a boat. He was 300 pounds, diabetic, anemic, never worked out a day in his life. And he's, you know, 73 at the time. Falls and he breaks his knee, has to have a knee replacement because it basically just shattered his knee. Mm. He's rehabbed from that. He's walking around in the garden with my mom and they're watering plants. He trips on the hose and breaks his hip. So he has to go in, get two pins put in his hip, gets that done. And then he goes through this phase of just poor quality of gut health to the point where eventually he goes into sepsis, goes into shock, has like a mini stroke, has to get rushed to the hospital, and they end up taking out 12 feet of his intestine. And he has to go on a bag for a year, like just a mess. My sister, my brother and I, you know, we all live here on the West Coast. We go to Florida, we're there to try to help. We get a call from the doctor. It's like, we're rushing your dad in for surgery right now. Say goodbye to him. This is the last time you're gonna speak to him. He's probably not gonna survive. So we're all crying. We're in the car trying to get to the hospital and we're yelling to him on the speakerphone that we love him. And they're like, he's giving you a thumbs up, but he's barely responding, this and that. So we wait and eventually he survives. And the guy just, he can't get out of bed. He can barely move his arms. He's just a mess. So he rehabs from this and gets back to the point where he can walk using a walker. We decide to move them to the West Coast. They get here, his third day here, he trips on the stairs and breaks his other hip.
Oh.
And shatters it. I mean, he breaks it bad.
Oh.
So now my mom at the same time was not well, has a back injury, had a head injury from a fall. So both of them, you know, we have to take care of them independently. My dad's in a recovery, like a rehab center right up the road. So I'm going there, and it's during COVID. So I've got all this stuff on me in the videos you'll see. And I sneak in there, and he's in his bed, and I have to like prop him up, and he can barely slide. I put little 2-pound ankle weights on his feet, and he's doing quad extensions, and he's got an orange 1/4-inch band. He's doing rows, and that's about all he can do. And that was 16 months ago, maybe even 14 months ago. And then today, this was with his workout here. My uncle was here. And of course, my dad, he calls himself Old Steel Legs. You know, this is him today, his improved gait, walking around, taking big full steps. This was after the workout. He pushed the tank, the sled. He picked up 30 pounds on a T-bell. He threw lacrosse balls. He rode the bike. Like the guy, he just...
And the smile on your dad, I'm going to have to find a way to be able to post this and let people see this, because his smile is what makes this the best.
He's so happy, and he's seen the light is what I put on the video. It's like, I always kind of joke and say like, hey, I know this secret and I want to let everybody in on it. Right. But we all know the secret, like exercise, it makes you feel better. We get done and my uncle's like, I feel great. And I'm like, that's how you're supposed to feel after a workout. And my dad's like, this is why I come every week. I mean, he drives 90 minutes to come work out with me here every time he comes out. And it's like, this is why I do it, because I feel so good. And it's like, I want that feeling to get infected in everybody. It's like, if you would just try it and get that feeling and you're like, wow, this is not what I thought, then people will really get into it. They'll get addicted to it. And this is a great thing to be addicted to, you know, is get into a routine of walking and find some form of resistance training that you like. Like if you don't like kettlebells, do the machines. If you don't like the machines, try a bar class. If you don't like that, learn how to use free weights. Like just move load. You got to move load to get your body strong. And that's the big takeaway from this.
Yeah. And I think that's, gosh, my generation, that's not what we were brought up with. You know, I mean, moving heavy loads, like that was, we were the cardio people, right? As were a lot of us, right? That the more we did cardio, the better for everything. And cardio has its time and place. And we can talk about that too, how important that is. But from a longevity perspective, as what we've been talking about, it's resistance. And you know, the term resistance training, weight training, strength training, it all kind of gets meshed together. It's basically giving your body some resistance to do movements. And that's how you build those bones you've been talking about and the muscle and to kind of slow down Mother Nature. You know, Mother Nature's doing her best to mess with all of us. She's trying her damnedest to take shit away. I mean, she really is, right? And the cool thing is, and this is why I'm so passionate about it, is we'll have to sit back and just say, this is it, right? I know I used to think that it was. And even from a gaining weight and fat perspective, I thought that was just what happened to all of us at this age. You know, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be that we lose the muscle and lose the bones, right?
It's a decision 100%. Like there, my mom, sorry, mom, to throw you under the bus, but all the time just says like, I'm just old. This is how it is. And I'm like, bullshit. That is not the right answer. Right. Yeah. You are deciding to be that way. Yes. You are deciding. Yeah. You all have the option and the control to say, I don't want to take this anymore. Right. And I'm going to make this change, this positive change in my life. You just got to find something that you enjoy doing. Like if people hate doing it, they're not going to do it. I don't blame you. I wouldn't like to do it either if it was uncomfortable and miserable and I didn't like it. But I find a form of it that I really like to do. Mm. And it's like, I look forward to it. I pop up every day and I'm like, ooh, it's kettlebell day. You know, oh, I get to push the tank today. Like I find the things that I want to do and I'll sprinkle things in there that I'm not good at, right? And I'm not just saying I only do what I love, but the key is like, you got to look forward to it, okay? So you hit one thing here and I'm going to, this is Dr. Attia, Peter Attia.
Oh, he talks about this. I was going to ask you about him.
I posted this, yep. 250% greater chance all cause mortality being weak. Okay.
Yep.
Resistance training is essential. And he's so great.
You guys, if you have not listened to Dr. Peter Attia, he has so much great content on this kind of stuff. And
so much.
And I'm sure you saw and maybe even listened to his podcast about the cliff at 75, right? And that big cliff, pardon me?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's his episode. I wrote it down. Episode 217. And his post was 11 on the 30th of November. He posted about how when you reach age 75, there's this cliff. All of a sudden, strength goes down. I mean, it's documented in studies that that is an age that things change. And that if you don't prepare for that cliff prior to that, your drop is going to be significant at that age. Significant at that age. If you get on it now, you can kind of lessen the cliff's, you know, steepness, whatever. I mean, it the decline is not as much. And that was so eye-opening, and it hit me in the gut. I mean, I think I kind of knew that, but to hear it in research and hear it from Dr. Peter Attia talking to another guy about this and kind of what happens.
Your belief.
Right. Yeah. And what, but what we can do before that to lessen that dramatically.
For sure. He has another a graph that he calls the longevity curve. And I love this because he draws it out like while he's doing it. And it's, you know, quality of life via years of living. Yes. And so in the beginning, your quality of life isn't all that great because you can barely hold your head up and you're just trying to figure out your body and you don't have a lot of muscle mass. And so as you start to get older and you get up to like 30, quality of life is high, muscle mass is high, bone density is high, you're crushing it. And then things start to come back. And so he's got three lines from here. The first one is you don't do anything, right? You don't exercise, you don't train, you don't eat well, you don't worry about sleep, you don't hydrate. You just live. And probably around 65 or 70, you come down to the end, it tapers down, quality of life isn't great, and then you die. And then the next person does the exact same thing, but right before the end, there's an intervention. There's a medical intervention of a device or a medicine or something that keeps them alive for 3 or 4 more years. But the quality is so low, the muscle mass is so low, the only thing keeping them alive is this medical intervention. So now you have a longer life, but a terrible quality of life. And he talks a lot about how it's not just that person that is negatively affected by those 3 or 4 years. It's the people that have had 60 years of a vision of you being this vibrant, great, you know, their grandpa, their dad, whatever it is. And then the last 2 to 3 years, they're in a hospital, they're stuck in a bed, they're miserable, they don't want to be here anymore. Those are the lasting images that are now in our heads, right? And unfortunately, I've had these experiences. Keegan's grandpa, you know, members of my family, the same thing, like just terrible quality of life at the end. So it's like, yeah, you're living longer, but what's the point of that poor quality? Yes. Okay. Yes. And then the last line is someone who eats well, sleeps well, trains, does all this, and their curve just goes on and on and on. And there's a gradual little taper, but it goes out to 80, 90, whatever. And he goes, you know, at 102, you die parachuting, right? Or whatever it is. Like you're out doing, you go out with your boots on. There's a huge quality of life until the very, very end. There's a couple of days spent in a hospital and that's it, right? Like just, it's high quality all the time. People taking advantage of their golden years. We work so hard to get to 65 and then the average person's dying at 78. So you're like, what the hell are you working 50 years for 11 or 12 years? And my math isn't great, you know, of what? Of poor quality.
For what? Yeah. It's so funny. I thought of this. We were at our financial advisor the other day and we were talking about, man, the market's been killing everybody, you know, with, you know, and she said, luckily we've come out of it pretty well. And she goes, when are you guys going to start spending some of this money? And it dawned on me. It's like, you know, she's kind of right. You know, like, why am I holding on to this for what? You know, I mean, not that I'm going to go spend my life savings and let it go, but yep. You know, we're always taught that we were saving and saving, and saving. Well, now, unfortunately, I'm at this age now where it's okay. We're at this stage where, yeah, you know, what are we holding on to all of this for right now? It's like the quality of life kind of conversation, right? Which Peter Attia addresses so well. And you just beautifully talked about. It is something that we can control to it. I mean, there are things that are out of our control. Obviously, if we get a disease, things that we cannot control, but we can do things leading up to our age that will reduce the odds of disease, you know, that we can't control and help prolong our quality of life.
I agree. That's
the cool thing. We control so much of this narrative.
Yeah. And you're not guaranteed tomorrow. I don't mean to get morbid, but it's like, yeah, you gotta live for the now. Like there needs to be moments where it's like, okay, we want to save for our kids to go to college and there's things like that, but we need to take trips. We need to go see family. We need to experience, you know?
Yeah.
And not to be dramatic, we were talking a little bit beforehand. I've had cancer twice. I've had 3 hip replacements. I've had a lot of surgeries. I've had 16 surgeries altogether. And 2 times I've had doctors talk to me about the potential of me not surviving. Okay. And that gives a very different mindset when you come out of something like that, where prior to it was work hard and save and work hard and save. And I was just committed to work. And I'm like, why do people need vacations? I just want to work. I was so obsessed with what I was doing. I'm like, I thank God I had that experience, you know, to have an opportunity to have my eyes open to like, there's more to this than just, you know, the daily grind. You need to experience. And so I was off to Iceland, off to Ireland, off to Canada. Like we're off doing things. And like, we got to live, you got to have experiences because you're not guaranteed tomorrow. Anything can happen.
And I love you bringing this up because I think, you know, I asked how old you were and you said you're how old?
42.
So 42. Okay. I got 20 years in you. I'm 62. So some people might be thinking, well, he's only 42 years old. I mean, a lot of people that if you're my age, we look at a 42 year, you're a youngster in my eyes, you know what I mean? Yeah. Really young. And with that, I think some people would probably think, you know, so what does he know about breaking a hip? What does he know about whatever? Well, you kind of know because it's happened to you. And I think not that someone has to go through everything in order to be able to help people, but I think your approach in working with this population comes from not only a knowledge base, but also I've experienced this base. I know what this is like to come back from a hip replacement or whatever.
Absolutely. It's a whole different experience. And like you said, like obviously you don't want people to have to go out there and experience it themselves, but those that do, I'll steal a line from Tony Robbins, like life is not happening to me, it's happening for me. And this is giving me a chance to experience what the average 75-year-old is going to experience, you know?
Yeah.
Luckily, I didn't have to go through any chemo treatments when I went through cancer. I just had to have a tumor taken out twice. But that experience was significant. You know, I had a 2-month rehab. I had to learn how to walk and raise my arms and use and like do all the basics, all the ADLs. I had to learn them all again. I had back surgery. It was, you know, flat on my back for a week and had to relearn all that and rebuild myself from the floor up, literally, and had to go through all these different hip surgeries, arthroscopies, and then hip replacements and dislocations, 7 dislocations in 24 hours. And it just kept popping out. So they had to do a full revision and like rebuilding that, regenerating that, and hernias and carpal tunnel and ruptured discs and everything else that has gone along with this has given me an opportunity to experience what my consumer experiences.
Yeah.
And as a 28-year-old diagnosed with lung cancer and a 36-year-old with 3 hip replacements, I had a very unique opportunity to look at older people and go, I empathize. I know exactly what you're talking about and what you went through. So I don't want to waste that and just keep it to myself and the 100 people that I get to work with. That's why I want to teach it to other people. And that's why we do everything we do with TOA and all the courses and all the content. And I'm just obsessed with putting that stuff out there for people. So they get answers to that. They know what to do, what it's like, and it's exactly like I am now. There, I don't have a stage presence. I don't have a persona. Like I'm not, you know, the liver king. And it's not this whole, you know, shtick. Like this is me.
Yeah.
This is as genuine as it's going to be. Yeah. I'm like this with my kids. I'm like this with my clients. I wear it on my sleeve and I'm going to tell you exactly what I feel and what I'm going through and goods and bads. And we can all learn from it. And I've had a great opportunity to do that multiple times. But even more opportunities to share it on with people like yourself and then platforms like this, you know, that's why I say it's an honor. It's a privilege to be able to do this and to get the message out with people and hopefully help them.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. What do you think is the biggest struggle that you see with this population when they come to you for help?
Boy, that's a tough one. There's a lot. I mean, let's just look at disease. Number one, sarcopenia is by far the biggest issue because I call it the linchpin. It's, you could say, what's this individual's issue? And you would go, well, they're weak and fill it in, whatever the other answer is, because rarely are you having someone come in that's in stellar shape that then has a laundry list of things. It's typically they've got this one thing they were just diagnosed with, and the rest of them is pretty damn good because they've been taking care of themselves. So sarcopenia is kind of at the center of a lot of these issues. And then from there, the biggest concern that I see is the frailty of the body and how we're like pyramids when we're younger, right? We have this wide base and we're really solid. And as we age, that inverts and they become spinning tops. And now you've got such the small little step, like the slightest out of balance, and it goes down, right? And you see these older people like really shrinking and just embracing every older stereotype, the Mr. Burns, the shoulders, the forward head, the whole body has to move when they look somewhere, right? And it's like, if they even get slightly off balance, they're going down. And so the trainers are like, well, just take bigger steps and just stand up. They can't, dude. They cannot. They are losing the gravity. They would walk like, we would all walk that way if that was the safest way to walk, but it's not, right? Like you saw my dad, you're supposed to be taking these big proud steps. So we have to like reverse engineer that and like build that strength stature back to them, which can be done. It just takes a lot of time because they've probably had 60 years of not doing anything. I had one lady tell me when I asked her during our consultation, I said, when was the last time you were, you know, you got up and down off the floor? And she goes, well, Nixon was in office. And I'm like,
oh, gosh,
that was a long time. Like, not everybody speaks fitness. Not everybody does this on a daily basis to where, you know, my parents never touched weights until me, until this, you know? So it's like, I think those are kind of the big ones. Weakness is really like, it really is at the center of all this because so much more comes with it. When your body is weak, you're susceptible to everything. From the aggressiveness of COVID and how that occurred and how you could see the older populations really struggle and were hit the hardest with that. But the ones that were in good shape and took, they didn't really for the most part. And then you look at pretty much every other disease and every other fall risk and everything else, it all adds up to if your body is strong and dense, you know, and muscularity and in bone density, you do tend to do pretty well and age comfortably. You know, and at the end of this, not to rant, I get on soapboxes, but rant. At the end of this is this question of, do I become dependent or do I maintain independent, right? Am I going to become someone else's problem or can I stay on my own? And it's like, that is where the disability threshold line is cut off, right? You're going to enter that disability threshold the moment that someone else has to start taking care of you. And for a lot of older pops, that is the moment of pride where they get there, they see a glimpse of it. My dad, he falls, you know, family members are having to do things that he never wanted us to do. He didn't want me to shave him. He didn't want me to cut his hair. He didn't want me to trim his nails. He didn't want me to have to do any of that stuff, right? And so he saw that and he's like, I need to get out of this situation. I need to build out of this. So he danced with that threshold and he went the other direction. But a lot of people don't. And so now you are now dependent on someone else. You're fully enthralled in the disability threshold and quality of life, unfortunately, goes way down. And you and I both know that mindset has such a big thing to do with quality of life, but also longevity in life. And if your mind is negative and poor and down, you're not gonna live long. You know, the body just doesn't work that way. It needs to be fed by positive emotion, positive experience, positive people around it. And if it's always negative, it won't last.
I mean, and the depression that will come with that. I mean, that this population is more often than not depressed to some level or another.
Losing friends, losing spouses, losing abilities. What's not to be depressed about?
And that's a great point. I'm starting to feel the losing friend piece a lot. I mean, I've lost a lot of friends from my high school and I'm 62. And so I remember one day my parents, when they were both alive, they lost a friend. I don't even remember who it was. And I remember my mom saying that your father won't go to any more funerals. He's done. He's done, because it seems like that's all he was doing, you know, and that starts hitting home. Right. And so, yeah, your mindset, it's like, why bother? Why bother trying? And then you just dig this hole that gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah. This is the first year I've been doing this for 24 years almost. And this is the first year I lost a client that I was really tight with. I had one other lady that I trained like four sessions and then she found out she had brain cancer and she was gone in like a week. But as far as like Dave and Janie both, I had trained Dave for probably a year and a half and Janie for like 5 years, and both were lost due to cancer rather quickly. And those experiences, you know, were things that we had to, I have to learn about, and inevitably this is going to happen and I have to learn this process. But to get 23 years into a career and not have that, I felt pretty fortunate. Mm-hmm. But also not prepared, you know, not prepared. I'm so tight with my people, man. I know their family members. I know their holiday plans. I know their kids. I know their, what they did for their careers. Like, this is a tight circle of people. And I think I speak for a lot of trainers, like we're in that inner circle and it's really hard to lose people. So of course you want to do everything you can to have them be the last man standing in their group, you know, yeah. But at the same time, as they do that, they become more alone, unfortunately.
How do you start with somebody? Like what kind of movements are you picking for people that really they're really weak and the goal is just to build some strength, try to maintain the muscle mass, reverse that a little bit. What kinds of things are you doing with your clients?
The simple answer is hinges, rows, mm-hmm. and carries. Those three things, if you can just do those three in the beginning, like every single workout should include one to two of those. And then you can slowly start to put in pushes and more split stance and some rotation work. And then as they get stronger, some power and eccentric and dynamic, and things can start to grow from there. But just to keep it simple in the beginning, we do on average, okay, we did a study like, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago across multiple different schools and different variations of different professionals. It was just a self-assessment, kind of a SWOT analysis, if you will, of the hinge. And we looked at all the strengths and weaknesses, but also how often people were moving. And so it was, I don't know, 300 or 400 people that we had. And we found that on average, 24 hours, people were awake for about 16 of those 24 hours. So averaging 8 hours of sleep. And then during those 16 hours, they were getting upwards of 100 plus hinges a day. So that came down to like, I don't know, 12 hinges per hour. And then they had ones that were higher due to their workout times and so forth. And so basically that's other than general locomotion, just moving about, walking in general. The hinging movement pattern is the one that we perform as far as like a breakout movement pattern. That's the one we perform probably the most. Hmm. So people will break at the hip and hinge. Then they're going to grab something and bring it towards them. And then they're going to carry it, go somewhere, and they're going to put it down. And we're going to do that over and over and over again. Groceries, laundry, kids, you know, food, anything. Like just, even if it's not heavy stuff, your purse, your backpack, your, and then when you get in the weight room, you do that all the time. You pick these up, you move them over here, you press them, you carry them back. So that's like kind of the breakdown of what we do all day long. We pick up stuff, we move it, we put it down, and we do that constantly. So if I can just look at that and be like, well, let's get really good at those things. And then we can start to build it and progress it a little bit further from there. Let me walk a little further. Now when I row it, let me try to press it. And so now when we go in and travel, I can carry my own bag and I can pick it up and I can put it away, which is a very common goal for us to write on these assessment sheets when they come in and we are doing our strategy session. What do you want to be able to do? Well, I want to handle my own luggage when I go to travel. I don't want to feel like I'm going to fall down. I want to maintain my independence. I want my pain levels to go down. Those are kind of the common ones. So if I can address those three movements and get really good at them, for the most part, they're going to improve all the way around. And then we can start to address more. You know, a lot of people want to be able to put their arms over their head and they can't. They can only get to here and they're stuck. And it's like, well, what kind of range can we eventually get you to? Impingements in the shoulder and the hip, back pain, you know, a lot of it's just weakness and stiffness. So the more you start to move, a lot of this stuff just kind of starts to go away. Those three movements are probably the most staple, the most basic foundational ones we've found that do the most.
That makes so much sense, especially about how much we hinge in a given day. You know, I don't think we all think about that so much, especially if we're bending over to pick up something off the floor or whatever it is. You know, we don't think about that, but that makes so much sense and why that needs to be the driver, really, you know, of and the others as well. But
for part of that study, I'm sorry to interrupt. But part of that study was, I'm going back through with my mind. I'm like, that wasn't very good math. Getting 16 and out, there were 8 hours or 6 hours of seated time where people were off their feet. So now you're down from 16, you're down to 10, you know, hours basically of actual movement. And so they average 10 or 11 hinges per hour, something along those lines. I have it cited on my, on our website if you ever want to see that, but it was really cool to kind of see the breakdown of what people were doing on average. And we specifically targeted the hinge because we're like, we kind of think that's the right one, but let's see. And it definitely was.
Oh, 100%. That makes so much sense. Yeah. Any coaches out there, pay attention, because I think this is great, great info. And by the way, at the end, I want to make sure that you tell everyone where they can find all your stuff, especially coaches, for sure. Balance. I get asked about balance all the time, right? How do you approach balance issues with somebody in improving their balance issues?
We just talked about this morning with a client. She said, you know, hey, I saw your video the other day on balance, and you were kind of talking about how people are like, well, I stand on one foot while I brush my teeth. In the video, I'm like, about all that does for you is it teaches you to stand on one foot while you brush your teeth. Like, literally, that's all it does.
Yes.
If you look at the average person that falls down, they're never standing on one foot when they fall down.
Correct.
They are in motion, right? And they're either slipping on ice, or they're slipping on something, or catching their foot. They're in motion. And so to stand on one foot and brush your teeth, it's like, that's great for ankle stability and spatial awareness, probably, and balance, and that in like terms of performing that task. But is that going to make you better at not falling down? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So if you were to walk around while you were brushing your teeth with one eye closed, okay, that would be a whole different thing, because now my spatial awareness of three dimension gets cut down. And so now I have to be cognitively more aware of where I am, spatially more aware of where I am. Plus, I'm dual tasking by brushing or flossing my teeth while I'm trying to manipulate, you know, one of my senses, basically. Okay. And that's where things really start to change. So the answer to this is very, very simple. Instead of doing a seated row, do a half kneeling row down on one knee with the foot up in front, like a kneeling lunge position, or stand up with your feet split. Or stand up with your feet split with your feet in line, like you're on a balance beam. Stand up with your feet split, with your feet in line, with your heel to your back toe, right? And now you're making a wide base, narrow, and even smaller. Well, now I'm having to coordinate and manipulate my body while performing a secondary task, a movement action. That's how we manipulate stability and balance training into our regular daily work. We'll do a suitcase carry rather than a farmer carry, because you have one weight on one side. The other one is the counterweight. So it's like, am I strong enough to hold these and move? Yes. But if I get rid of one, I don't have the counterweight. Now, am I strong enough to maintain the posture and then carry? That will help my stability. That will improve my gait, right? That will change things for us. So that's a big key, is kind of, cross merge. I want to check off as many boxes as I can of things I want to achieve with one or two movement patterns, you know, and kind of incorporate as many of those as I can on a daily basis.
Yeah, a little bang for your buck kind of thing.
For sure.
You know, it's interesting with balance. I get asked a lot, like with a lunge, for example. I tell people that you need to look at the purpose of the exercise. If the purpose of the exercise is to load it and go as heavy as you can, then obviously, you don't want to hold on to, and well, I shouldn't say that other way. If the purpose is to load it as heavy as you can, I always say, if you have balance issues, hold on to something. You know, if you're doing this static lunge, let's say, create a bit of a wider base. You don't have to do the balance beam on this, because we're not working balance. We're working load. Right. We're trying to load the legs. However, if you are working balance, if the purpose of the exercise is to work balance, then I love what you're saying. Go back to the balance beam, let you know, and do all the other little things like you're talking about. I think a lot of people, you know, come to me for strength, and so their question is not really, it's kind of about balance, but they say, you know, my balance is getting in the way of me moving weight. I said, well, let's talk about, why are you doing this exercise? And go through, here's the priority then. It's not cheating to hold on to something to stabilize you. Chances are you don't need a death grip on anything. You just probably need to touch something. That's probably the extent for a lot of people. It's not a whole lot more than that. And then drive home whatever the purpose is. So if it's moving weight, let's focus on getting yourself stable enough to move weight. If the purpose is balance, let's not think about the weight so much anymore. And now let's focus on different ways to approach balance.
I agree. And I really like that. And as you break it in a dimension of the purpose of today's training,
Yes.
Right. And so you want to look at that, and we'll do days where we're doing like a single leg Romanian deadlift, and clients are just like, I can't do as heavy as you want. And I'm like, then hang on, right?
Yes.
Put your
yes.
hand on the countertop or on a bench. That's fine. Because the whole idea is I want you to be stable and not worry about falling over. I just want you to pull this heavy weight with one leg, right? But then a week or two later, it will be, hey, cut that weight down by a third and let's go really, really light and let's focus on the balance and incorporate that in there. So I agree. I think that's a great way to do it. But I will tell you that the stronger you are, the better your balance will be, no matter what the case is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, your strength will naturally occur and kind of accrue in better stability. And especially if you're splitting your feet and you're kind of putting yourself in some different positions, you know, to pull from. Even with your block leg, like I'm right-handed and right-footed, so I would block with my left and kick with my right leg. I threw the discus, I threw the hammer, I would block with my left leg, I'd throw with my right side, right? So I've probably done a billion blocks more with my left leg forward. So whenever I'm lifting, I always have my right foot forward because I'm like, I gotta make up this gap. We call it seeking muscular equality. I've got this left side strength on my right side. And if I've done this for 30 years, I need to do something to try to get it close, right? Like we have asymmetries that are gonna make us less strong, less balanced. So if you fill in some of those gaps naturally, if you just get them stronger, that will get you closer to seeking a muscular equality that will ultimately help your stability, your balance, your coordination, your reaction time. All of those things will come better because you're more equated. And this may not be super popular to say this, but I don't think it's a great idea to take unstable people and put them on implements that are unstable.
Oh, thank God right? you said it. thank God
I,
you said
I never
that.
Know. I never know. So I never know how people feel. They're like, but I love the Bosu ball. And I'm oh. like, it's got its place. But not with these folks, not in my opinion. Like yeah. they, I know the earth is moving, folks, but I can't have them stand on the ground that's not moving and have them feel really strong and secure, let alone put them on something else that's now not strong and secure. Like, let me master this first. But if you water ski, roller skate, roller blade, if you're doing anything where something's moving under you, then I think that's got a part in your training. But outside of that, I don't use them. We don't even have any. I mean, I find it non-valuable, to be honest. I have other ways of training stability.
The risk versus reward is not there. It's not there. And this is what kills me about the Bosu ball, is that the manufacturer even says, do not use this with the ball side down.
Oh, yeah.
You see people doing that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, and they're standing on one foot trying to do a bicep curl while they're standing on this thinking, this is helpful. And, you know, why not do your bicep curls? And then if you want to stand on one foot for a certain length of time, just go do that over there on the floor or something, you know, I mean, whatever, but I've never understood that. And honestly, I have a Bosu here, but I use it for one purpose. It's on its flat size. I get down on the ground and I lay back on it. It's a prop for me for like glute bridges. It can be used in a pretty decent way for that.
Yeah.
Other than that, I got nothing. To be honest,
like a inverted plank on it can be cool where your heels are on there and you're on your back, toes up, kind of holding like that kind of thing, an extended bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to plank on it with your arms a little bit, I mean, there's some little things we could use them for, but again, I'd just be going like, you're making me use this. I'll think up some stuff. I just don't see a value for them to be honest, for the most part. And your risk is very high. Same with the full, you know, exercise physio balls. I'd rather use glute rollers, you know what I mean? And have something there to be able to work with, to curl and work the backside of the body than sit on those. It's one little scratch or puncture away from blowing apart. And then I don't remember the Kings basketball player who broke both of his wrists or whatever it was back in the early 2000s, but pretty much ended his career, you know, after that happened. And it's like, is that risk versus the reward?
You know, people keep asking us in the inner circle, like if they don't have a bench, can they do a bench press from a ball? And I'm like, no. Why would you put yourself on that surface trying to move as much weight as you possibly can? I mean, that's a
just
big
lay down on the floor.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lay on the floor and then bridge and you've got a decline. I mean, that's all you need. Those two are great. You know,
100%. Let's talk hips for a second, because I have a very personal stake in this part of the conversation, without a doubt.
I've had
a personal stake in this whole conversation, because I am your, as I said, I am your population, without a doubt. Diagnosed with arthritis, and as a result, a nice, cool looking bone spur. Actually, it's like shaped like a hook like this, which is quite unusual, evidently. Yeah, it's actually really cool to see. And it explains so much of my hip pain that I've had. It's been two different types of pain for so long, and I couldn't understand. Now arthritis pain is one type of pain, and the bone spur is totally another type of pain. Like the bone spur is sharp, and which makes sense. Something's caught in that bone spur. I can feel when that happens. And then I can feel the achy pain of the arthritis. Two very different things for me. But as awful as that diagnosis was, and honestly, the guy says, I will be a hip replacement candidate at some point in my life. I'm learning to work around it. You know, I haven't, the only thing I don't do anymore are full range of motion back squats. That's it, pretty much. You know, I've learned to manipulate everything else. And currently, I don't know if you knew this, I am doing my training phase has been all single leg, and it's been nothing but working on hip strength and stability. That's it. For the purpose of me, of longevity, right? Of being able to continue to do things. And I've been on this program now for almost 10 weeks. And whoa, oh my God, what a difference. It's insane. I don't know if this is something that will stay with me for however long. I don't know. But it's made my hip life so much better. The progress I've made has been outrageous. And most of my exercises are done with little to no weight. You know, they're not max weight. Let's see how much I can move on a Bulgarian split squat. I started with Bulgarian split squats with nothing, with absolutely nothing, focused nothing more than what is my hip doing? How does it, am I going down with 3 points of contact in my foot? I'm so focused on what I'm doing. I wasn't using any weight. I gradually added weight. Anyway, long-winded way of saying I'm doing this programming, improving my hip stability and strength. What else should I be doing?
The first thing that comes to mind is abduction work. That's probably our weakest area of the hip. It's the most exposed. The hip flexor strength and mobility, questionable, but strength is usually pretty solid on most people. Doesn't mean that you can't train your hip flexors. I've actually seen research recently that showcased like improved in range of motion, quality of life, reduced pain, etc. via training the hip flexors more, doing band marches and kettlebell toe raises and, you know, those types of exercises to target them to be pretty beneficial. So, but for the most part, we do a lot of our motion and action in that direction. So typically that's pretty strong. Brett Contreras has helped in, you know, just create a whole generation of people who train their glutes now. So typically the backside of the body is pretty strong there for most folks. I never looked at glutes as a separate muscle group. I just lumped it in with legs when I was younger. And you're talking to a guy who's had 7 hip surgeries. So I think that was a missing piece. So, and then your adductor strength, because of the way the hip is kind of curved and it encourages you to be stronger there. So really it leaves the susceptible area. We don't do a lot of lateral slides or lateral walking. So that's kind of the weak spot. And I think that's where we see a lot of the breakdown as arthritis starts to address there, and or I'm not going to say improper movement patterns, but like, especially you'll see with parents that hold kids, they shift one hip, and someone who works at a counter, you know, is typing here and scanning with us. It's like these repetitive movement patterns that we do that maybe aren't in the best positions, but we abuse them and do that over and over again. It leads to these limitations, these injuries, these arthritic responses where eventually the bone starts to break down. It starts to get very porous. It starts to rub. It starts to chew away all the tissue, which in this case is the labrum inside the acetabular socket where the femoral head hits. And so the bone gets really porous and it's just like a dried sponge. And now every time it moves, it's just going to cheese grate away your labrum. And when they went in to do my arthroscopies, there was no labrum. It was completely gone. It was just mushed into each corners. Like think of like a cheese in a block that gets wet and it just mushed into, packed into this corner, packed in here, but in the actual socket, gone, just pure bone on bone. So typically you get to a point where it's like, hey, we're headed this way, which might sound like you're at. The good thing to know is as you train it, you're probably not going to make it a whole lot worse because you're destined for a hip replacement. So let's improve quality of life. And instead of working around it, learn to work the movement patterns you need, but without encouraging more flare-ups or discomfort. So what split stance exercises can you do that don't hurt it, but you got to do a split stance? What loaded carry can you do that doesn't hurt, but you got to do a carry? what variation of a hinge, okay, what variation of a squat, or in our business, we in our house in here, those are the same. You either do a hinge or a hinge with a bent knee. So I'm either RDLing or I'm deadlifting, right? But either way, it's a hinge. So it's whichever one's most comfortable for me. And so you kind of find ones that you can work with rather than going, I'm going to take hinging out. That just bothers me.
Yes.
That's not true. Can I do a foot elevated bridge? That's a hinge, but I'm taking away, I'm actually tractioning my hip while I'm bridging. That feels a lot better. Cool. At least I can target that. So again, a long answer to your long question, our long, we can just go both of us forever here.
Yeah.
Is abduction strength. Get in your mini band laterals, your monsters, yep, your clams, work those. And even if you use like monkey foot or a ankle weights that can attach to your feet, like load and do some glute extension, donkey kicks, like work on those angles. Try to get the outside abductors of your hips strong. And then your ADL, everything else, you know, all the other areas as well. But specifically when you kind of start to look at improving the quality of your hip movement patterns and building the strength in there, try to kind of mimic the ones that you're going to do more often. So split squatting is great. Stepping up is great, but think of the heights and the ranges you're going to use. We don't really step any higher than 10 inches in the modern world. You know, almost every step into a house is 6 or 8 inches. So if you go to 10, maybe 12, there's no point in doing 18 inch step ups if it hurts your hip. So just go back to a 12, right? Like work what you can rather than trying to abuse and be like, well, I have to be on this height or I have to deadlift below parallel. You don't, man. Like you can just deadlift to mid thigh. That's okay, right? You're still getting all the other benefits. You're just not aggravating your hip injury. And as with all of this is I'm going to have a hip replacement at some point. So I just want to get as strong as I can and not flare things up as much as I can until I get to that point. Because once you get there, life is golden. And if you have resistance training to that, your rehab can be done in like 2 to 6 weeks. If you don't, it's going to be more like 8 to 16 weeks. You know, like you can bounce back so much faster. And then getting arthroscopies beforehand. Again, I don't know. I have no idea what exactly is going with your hip. Just talking in general. Mm-hmm. Arthroscopy is just a really good cleanup and it just kind of gets everything out of there and they can do some things in there to kind of improve and buy you a little time. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to get to 40 and I'm like, there's no way. At 36, I'm like, I have to do it. I can't do anything. Quality of life was as low as it could be. So we had to pull the trigger on that. And yeah, I was better and more grateful for it literally the next day. So, I mean, once you get to that point and you're just like, I can't go on with this anymore. I am all for surgery and do it to improve your quality of life. Yeah. But if you're 42 and they're like, can we wait till you're 50? And you're like, 8 more years of this,
no,
you know, or if God forbid, they're like, start taking these drugs. Like, no, yeah, I want another opinion. Like, again, we're not guaranteed tomorrow. So I'm going to suffer for 8 years until I can maybe get to a surgery. Like, just help me out now, you know?
Anyway, I totally
I can
agree
talk about that forever. That's a passion point for me.
And I love it. What is your thought about, okay, if this is in the cards, I mean, you know, as the doc told me the day we met and we went over my x-ray, he said, your hip will never be better than it is today. I mean, this is as good as it, and you could say that, I guess, every day. So with the cards kind of being dealt, what is your thought about, well, why not get a surgery earlier than later with the chances of recovering better? Is there any research behind that? Is there like a pro and con to that?
I like to get at least 8 weeks. So if I have a client that's like, I think I need a hip replacement. They go and they talk to their doc and the doc's like, yep, we could do it. If you can give me 8 weeks between now and the time you have that surgery, I have a whole program that I put people through to get their hips really, really strong. Because if I know we're doing that date, then I can, I mean, in a as gentle way as I can just hammer your hip for 8 weeks to get it as strong. Because what's the worst that's going to happen? Like you'll be in pain. Yeah. I get it. That sucks. But this will cut off weeks, if not a month of rehab for you on the other end of this. And the doctor will be really happy because you're a glowing, you know, success on the other end of this. So yeah, if I could get 8 weeks in between there, 6 weeks, maybe at a minimum, but I'd like 8 weeks to be able to build a program, work you through where we get a lot of hip work in and get you ready for that surgery. And then afterwards, you're able to rehabilitate so much more efficiently because you've built muscle and the stimulus is there. And it's like, okay, I know what to do. We've been doing it for 8 weeks, you know, and it's basically just a revved up version of what your rehab will be afterwards. And you'll build back to being able to do what you were doing prior to, but now you're pain free.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I've had clients that are 28, they got a hip replacement and they were like, well, I'm going to have to another one at 48. Fine. That's fine.
Let's
I mean,
go.
Since I've had mine, the 5 years, the technology now, it was going to have to be a full revision. Now it's dislocate, take out the cap, take off the ball, screw in new ones, pop it back together. It's like a 35-minute procedure. It's like an oil change, you know? And that's just in 5 years. My doctor, jeez. I interviewed her last year and she told me that. And I'm like, really? I'm like, what happened to rehabbing to do the whole thing? She's like, we don't have to do it anymore. I gave you all the best parts. We just didn't know if the caps would get there. And she's like, we've got them now. And I'm like, this is great. This is great news. So wow. Yeah. Okay. So at 36, so at 56, I have to do it again. And then at 76, I have to do it again. Fine. Yeah. Hopefully I get a chance to get another one at 96. But back in the day, they had to like cut it all off and start all over. And you could only get two because you'd run out of leg, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a whole different ballgame now. If it changes your quality of life, right? If you're miserable, you can't keep living like that. You're making everyone else miserable too. You're definitely uncomfortable. Everyone else is suffering because of it. Your family, your kids, your wife, your husband, everybody. So it's like, get it better. You know, when people come in and they're like, I just can't right now. I'm too busy taking care of everyone else. I hear that. And I'm just like, you're not going to be able to do that much longer because you're not taking care of the person who's taking care of everybody. Like, that's kind of silly, right? It's kind of backwards. You know, like if you're that person, number one, like how long can you do this? Because you're killing yourself. Right. But if you don't start training, then you're not going to be there for anybody much longer. And so if that's the priority, I want to take care of people. That's half the reason I do this. But the other half is I want to be healthy and I want to go do things on my own. I still have a life to live too. And so it's like, I want everybody to have that, but to kind of like reserve that or restrict it because of a doctor's suggestion or because of a guideline that we have greater success rates at 50, that's all horseshit.
Yeah.
I think you need to go into these doctors and talk to them, be your own advocate and go, my quality of life is bad and I don't want to live like this anymore. I need your help. And if their job and their oath is to help improve you, then they should. Sorry to rant on this, but I get a lot of people that get sent back to me with a no answer. And I see them every day and I'm like, you are an absolute candidate for this. You know what I mean? I mean, you can't move. They can't sit down. They can't lay down. They can't stand up. They can't. It's like, what can you do? Well, wait 3 more years. Come on, man. This is how people get addicted to narcotics and to opioids because they can't cope. And I don't blame them. I did too. So I get it, man.
I'll tell you, luckily for me, I'm nowhere near this. You would never even know probably by just watching me day to day, whatever. But it's always good to know because this is obviously a new path for me, you know, something that, I just a year in the making. I've only been at this for a year and having this diagnosis. So, you know, but your information is so helpful for this. So I can't thank you enough for that. And I would love to close this out with one more thing I want to ask you. And that is for the younger crew that might be listening to this, what is your best advice for them? Because I think they have so much to look forward to. It's so hard for them to think about, when I'm 80, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're thinking about what they're doing next week, not when they're 80 years old, you know, but what's your best advice for the younger set?
So I'll start with this, not to shoot anybody down, but I had this mindset that I was invincible. And I had a 600-pound deadlift and a 550-pound back squat, and I was fairly strong for my size. And I thought, if I can do that, then nothing will hurt me. And then I was picking up throw pillows and ruptured a disc in my back, right? So it's like everyone has vulnerabilities. Everyone has a weakness. You need to be able to look at yourself with a ego-removed mind and go, where are my weaknesses? And for me, it was mobility and range of motion. And I was just a tightly wound muscular little ball at the time. And it's like, I have to be able to work on my limitations, my weaknesses. So I would have you take like a very genuine, good look at yourself physically and go, where am I weak at? And most of us, it's lacking glute muscular development. Okay. Especially on the guy's end. Like it's just an area that men typically don't train very often, but that's becoming more of a common thing. So get your butt strong, because the stronger your butts are, the healthier and the more pressure you're taking off your back. Okay. And on the other side of things is, and I know, again, this might not be very popular, but loading your back is a very, very challenging way to load your body via back squat or any of the other front squats, any of this. The ability of being able to put yourself inside a hex bar, I think, is probably the best option for us. So for all you deadlifters out there, I would really encourage you to try to maneuver your training more towards center mass, where your body takes the load evenly, rather than the bar being placed high behind your center of mass. It forces your hips down. Like, the back squat's a very, very challenging, very difficult lift. Though you can't move nearly as much in a goblet, you'll probably get more work out of it and more core strength development, that kind of thing. Long-winded answer, but take care of your glutes, really take care of your hips and your back, because you only get one. Last thing, I talk about the back being a copper wire. You can bend it and straighten it and bend it and straighten it and bend it and straighten it. And it doesn't show any wear and tear. And just one time you bend it and it snaps. And that was me picking up the throw pillows. Like, I was fine. And then one day I wasn't, and everything changed after that. So unfortunately, you know, we have these mindsets that we can handle anything thrown our way. And even Achilles had his weak spot. So, you know, keep that in mind. Train as efficiently, as well-rounded as you can. Dr. Tia says, as we age, get as strong as you can and avoid injury like the plague. Like, those are the two things. Get super strong, don't get hurt, right? Yeah. Everything else, sleep, eat well, but those are the two big ones, okay? Yeah. Get as strong as you can and avoid getting injured.
For sure. Well, this has been absolutely amazing. Getting to speak with you today.
I love talking about this, as you can tell.
Well, and I love your passion about this.
I would love to come back and chat, like, whenever you want. I love doing this. So please, anytime you want to chat, I'm here. I would love to.
We will definitely do this again. Cool. Can you let everyone know where they can find you? I also want to put this in the show notes, but if you can just tell everyone.
So trainingtheolderadult.com, okay, all spelled out, trainingtheolderadult.com. That's our website. I'm on Instagram, Robert Linkle, L-I-N-K-U-L. I'm on Facebook, Robert Linkle. Our YouTube channel, Robert Linkle. We're really trying hard to grow the YouTube channel. So I would love any subscriptions. Some people pop over there, you know, check out our videos. I've got 400 something videos. We don't charge anything on there. It's just content. So enjoy, watch as many as you like, and hopefully we'll earn your subscription and enjoying the content. So yeah, that's where you can find us.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Robert. It was great to chat with you, and we will definitely be doing this again.
I hope so. Thank you. You're the best.
Take care.